the New Tech Times, a video magazine for the electronic age. In this edition, a family finds that teaching kids by computer takes more than just plugging it in. A review of exercising by video cassette. Is it hazardous to your health? The Laserdisc and Hollywood Animation join forces to save the arcades with a breakthrough in video game technology. All this and more on the New Tech Times.
The New Tech Times is brought to you through a grant from the Friends of WHATV and Warsaw Insurance Companies. Times change. Warsaw works.
I'm Nicholas Johnson. When I was a federal communications commissioner, television meant the three networks. Telephones were to talk into, not about, and computers, well, they were for specialists and large corporations. Then came the electronics revolution with its video recorders and wireless telephones, personal computers, a whole new bewildering world of entertainment, information, services. And that's what the New Tech Times is all about, to help people like you and me think it through before we either buy in or reject it all. And of all the equipment and purchases made possible by this revolution, the most significant and the most anxiety-provoking is the home computer. Today, their best-selling books aimed at reducing that anxiety, one of the most popular is the Personal Computer Book. Here's its author, Peter McWilliams.
How do you buy your first computer? Well, you buy your first computer very carefully, unless you have lots of money, in which case it doesn't really matter. But for most people, you have to do a lot of shopping. You've got to shop around, you've got to visit computer stores, do your homework, read about computers, read articles about computers, read books about computers. When you feel comfortable enough, then take the plunge. And a lot of people, by the way, should not get personal computers. If you want to balance your checkbook, there's no reason on earth to buy a computer any more expensive than $5, which is a $5 pocket calculator. You can balance your checkbook much better and faster and easier with a $5 calculator than you can with a $5,000 personal computer. If all you want to do is learn a little bit about computers, you should probably go out and buy something like a Commodore VIC-20. If all you want to do is play games on your computer, you should go out and get a ColecoVision. And then you can add to the ColecoVision a little bit more and build it up into a computer for your home. If what you want to do is word processing as economically as possible, you should probably look into a K-Pro. If you want to do two tasks, for example, if you wanted to play games and do word processing, definitely buy two computers. Because the best game-playing computers are available now for about $200. The best word processing computers cost a lot more, and they don't play games very well. And the ones that play games don't process words all that well. And you can save a lot of money by buying two separate computers than by buying one computer. And yes, you will buy many computers in your lifetime. You will not buy this one computer, and that will last you your whole life. Sorry. You will probably go through several computers, just as you've probably gone through several cars, just as you've probably gone through a few TV sets if you've been around for a period of time. And that's just going to happen. So don't think, Will this do me into my old age and retirement? Don't worry about it. You know, buy whatever you think will do best for right now, and then plan to buy another one in a few years.
Whether to buy a computer, which computer to buy, those are major decisions. Peter McWilliams' book can help, and there are other recommended readings we'll pass along later in the program. But I've been through this process, and let me tell you, once you bring home one of these things for the kids, you have a major family project on your hands, as this family found out.
Ooh, I only did that once or twice.
Yeah, I only did that once.
In talking it over, it seemed to us that it would be able to do a lot of things for our kids in terms of just helping them learn in ways that otherwise they might not have been able to learn.
So, Brennan, what did you do today?
Dennis and Tricia Day and their sons had to make a tough decision. a computer, or a family vacation.
We'd already started talking about the fact that we'd been saving our money to go to the Grand Canyon. And I remember the night that we sat down and we said, well, you know, why don't we look at it this way? We can either go to the Grand Canyon or buy a computer. And Brendan thought it was a wonderful idea to buy the computer. Casey, when we first started talking about it, wasn't so sure that the Grand Canyon wouldn't have been a lot better than the computer.
I went out and purchased it myself, and I brought it home, got it all hooked up, turned it on, and it didn't work. And I have a friend who's into computers, and I called him up, and he said, that's strange. I mean, that's completely new to me. It should work. And I took it back, and sure enough, there was something wrong with the computer. So my initial reaction was absolute frustration, because I had to wait about 24 hours before I could take it back, and I was ready to throw the damn thing away.
When they finally got their computer plugged in and working, the next step was to buy software, programs for their computer.
It's been very frustrating. The last time that we were in looking for something to buy, I had asked the salesman if there was any good educational programming that he could recommend, and he showed me a few rather dull kinds of things. And then he said, but if you really want to see the best educational software in the shop, come over here, I'll show it to you. So I thought, oh, this is great. And I walked over and he put this disc in and he said, here it is. And it was a game. It was some little ladders and monsters chasing you or something. And he said, now this is the way to use a computer. And I thought, that's terrible.
Most of the creativity is going into the games, obviously. And so you end up with a product that is bad for two reasons. One, it's not very interesting, and therefore the kids aren't interested in sitting down and running it. And secondly, it's really not tailored for the needs of your children.
Some people have the feeling that you just go and you buy this thing and you bring it home and you turn it on and it does wonderful, dazzling things.
I think it was deleted.
You know what? It was deleted.
Yeah, entirely deleted. You couldn't get it out of the phone.
Okay. Well.
Months later, the computer still isn't dazzling the Day family, but it has become a new way to assist an old activity, storytelling.
Oh, no. You want oh, no, or you want to keep suddenly?
Oh, no, then a
okay, I see. You want to say oh, no.
And then whatever that thing is, I forget.
Okay. Brendan is a real creative kid. He loves to make up stories, and he loves to write, and he loves to figure out how to make his characters interact and do things, and the computer is a wonderful way for him to do that because it's like just letting his mind go free.
I can go back and correct my mistakes more without having to worry about having an eraser, and I don't have to sharpen the pencil, and you can jump around in the program by just pressing a button, and your work comes out really nicely and neat, and you only need to do one draft.
For Casey, I think what is happening is he's finding out that he can work with ideas. The computer, I really believe, is getting that point across to Casey. I know what you can do.
I know you'll be able to do it.
He has this vocabulary spelling program that he works on every week. And it's a very simple program. It involves defining words and spelling them and then using them in context. Poison.
See, the spelling program, it's such a neat thing. It's like a game anyway. It makes it fun. The other good thing about the computer is it's not like the teachers I'm stuck with. You know, if you keep making a mistake, the teachers, you know, they'll say, no, try it. With the computer, just be calm, you know, like that.
We were looking it over the other night, and he said, you know, it's just amazing when I think all of that came from me. All of that came from me. I think that the computer can enhance family interaction if the family uses it that way, and that's the important thing. And I even now I think how terrible to be comparing the Grand Canyon to a computer. But the Grand Canyon will always be there, I hope. And computers will always be there too, but what we're getting out of it right now is really important. So I'm glad we did it.
Still to come, Exercising by Cassette and a commentary from Edwin Newman. Here again is Nicholas Johnson.
Well, computers are only part of this electronics revolution. TV is changing too. And nothing is changing it more radically than these video cassette recorders. They let you record programs or make your own. And now pre-recorded tapes have become a big business. Some of the most popular are not just movies, but they show you things like how to exercise. And here to talk about the pros and cons of exercise cassettes is Judy Alter, author of Surviving Exercise. Hi, Judy. Welcome to New Tech Times.
Hi, Nick. Thanks.
You know, I think I'd rather go jogging or have a swim than stay home and watch a video cassette of exercise. Isn't this maybe an example of one more television intrusion into our lives?
It could be, but I think the purpose of having those tapes around is to review after a class.
Well, then the question is whether they really serve that purpose very well. And I have some tapes here I'd like you to take a look at, and maybe you give us an evaluation of them.
Good.
Arms up and reach left, right. Left, right, five, six, seven, forward and push. Two, three, four.
Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight to the right. Pull it out. Two, three, four, and up.
And again. Stop, 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 stop.
Now starting with the head, you take it right and left and right and left and right and left. Fantastic! Keep it moving, moving, yeah.
All right, there are the tapes. Now, aside from the money they cost, what kind of harm's really done with something like that?
Those tapes have in them the same problems that most of the exercise systems in books and in classes around the country have.
Well, so you're really indicting the whole exercise.
Yeah, that's what my book's about.
I see. Okay. Well, now, but why? What are they doing wrong?
Most of the things. They're bouncing instead of holding a stretch.
Well, now, what's wrong with that?
Bouncing tears cross fibers and doesn't stretch because half of a bounce is a contraction, and that cancels out the stretch.
So you should just go into your stretch and hold it.
And hold at least for a minute.
Yeah, somebody told me that once. I try to remember.
That's important.
Okay, what else?
They're saying you're to strengthen your body. They're doing fast sit-ups and fast other kinds of supposedly strengthening where that uses momentum for the most part. You're throwing the body parts around, and that's not strengthening.
So what should you
be doing? The muscle's grabbing.
What should you do?
When you do anything for strength, you go down and up against gravity slowly till it's tired.
I'm so pleased to hear that.
Then you do it once more. Slowly, right.
Okay.
They're also telling you that you're going to get slim and a smaller waistline by stretching it because this side stretch is actually widening.
I know
it
never worked for me, but I was told it was supposed to help.
It's wrong. It doesn't help.
Why not?
Because there are three stomach muscles, two of which cross the waist on a bias. And when you stretch a bias, you're just widening it. Those muscles should be strengthened, that means contracted, by going down and up against gravity slowly.
So you haven't been wasting your time as a university professor, researching, writing about this stuff. You really do have something to say about it. Well, I appreciate that. But is there anything that we can say good about this? You know, there's some people who say we shouldn't exercise at all. George Bernard Shaw always said he would sit rather than stand, lie down rather than sit every chance he got. Is exercise hazardous to our health, or is there some good in this?
It's really important. People should go and exercise because we now know it keeps you fit, it relaxes tension. They're burning calories if the people actually get up in their living rooms and do those, exercise with the tapes. And the fact that they want to exercise is very good. Their motivation is right. But I don't think they should be doing it that way.
Okay. Now, how much of this problem, Judy, do you think comes from the fact that this is, after all, television? It's a video cassette, and they're trying to sell people something they're used to seeing on their screen.
There's a whole lot of television in these tapes because they're fast-moving, and they have very beautiful, slim, very perfect people right behind the exercise leader doing everything correctly. And in reality, not everybody's perfect, and you have no interchange from the tape, from the teacher to you telling you, fix your knee, don't lock, don't hurt. If it stops,
yeah,
don't do it. So that television is blocking what we really want them to be doing, and that is being fit.
Thank you, Judy. Of course, exercise cassettes are just one of many kinds of programs or software you can buy. We'll be reviewing everything from video games to video discs on the New Tech Times. And we'd like your suggestions for consumer reviews. So let me know what you'd like to see on the New Tech Times. Send your ideas to 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Whether it's video exercise or video games, the producers of high-tech consumer goods are in stiff competition for our money. Video games began in public arcades, but now the video arcade business is feeling the pinch as electronic breakthroughs make home games more like the arcade versions. I mean, why spend quarter after quarter on Pac-Man when you can buy a Pac-Man cartridge and play it at home as often as you want? So to bring the players back to the arcades, the game designers are working with Hollywood movie makers to create a new generation of video games. We have this report.
Dragon's Lair, a fantasy adventure where you become a valiant knight on a quest to rescue the fair princess from the clutches of an evil dragon. You control the actions of a daring adventurer finding his way through the castle of a dark wizard who has enchanted it with treacherous monsters and obstacles.
Dragon's Lair is not a feature-length movie. It's not even a Saturday morning cartoon. Dragon's Lair is a brand new, first-in-the-block animated video game that you can play in an arcade.
It's been called by some people the jazz singer of the arcade business, which is the jazz singer was the first talkie. You know, and that's what it is. It's opened up the vision. And I believe what it probably has done is antiquated all the other arcade games. And there'll be a whole barrage now of games which will start using photographic visuals and not computer-generated visuals.
But we're getting ahead of the story. It all started with a simple game like Pong that you could play on your home TV set. One of the first video games, but not very exciting. Then along came the video arcade with flashy games that you couldn't get at home, and the race for the quarter was on. And the quarters came into the arcade to the tune of $9 billion a year. But the home video game makers wanted a bigger cut of the action, so they produced more complex games, and the fight for the quarter heated up as new home video game cartridges filed into battle.
There's no question about it. The first generation of home games were little line drawings, and were, but now they're getting so involved, they're actually just as sophisticated as some of these games. You can play Centipede and Pac-Man on your home Atari systems, you know, the computer games, and it's taken a lot of weight.
So new games were brought in to entice video players back to the arcade. Even games based on box office smashes were brought into the battle.
They're looking for something new and different. You know, they come in here with a dollar. Maybe they'll spend the one or two quarters in video games, maybe a quarter for soda, and a quarter for that different type of amusement. They wanted variety. They can't just play the same stuff over and over. It's too much. It's just too boring.
Then along came a new piece of technology called the Laserdisc, and a man named Don Bluth who liked to tell stories with classical animation.
Why have you come?
Animation is that beautiful thing that, if it's done properly, can tell stories like no other art form can.
My son's life is in great danger.
We were approached by a company called Advanced Microcomputers. And these people were engineers, and they were trying to conceptualize a game about some kind of sword and sorcery, and they had just gotten very excited about the laser disc, and they came to us and said, would you like to animate an arcade game on the laser disc?
The laser disc, it uses a light beam to produce pictures on a TV screen in any order you desire at the touch of a button. full-color motion pictures and random access of those pictures, when you put that together, you might just have a breakthrough for video arcade games. And that breakthrough is Dragon's Lair.
When you're looking at the little knight in Dragon's Lair, he gets into trouble. He may be walking up a drawbridge. The drawbridge is rotten, and so he caves in. At that moment, he's in trouble. That's the little moment in time when the game player should say, uh-oh, I need to get him out of trouble. At that point, if he pushes the sword button, the laser light will access to another scene, showing Dirk pull his sword and slay the monster and get out of the bridge and go on in the castle. So I've set up a scene which shows a threat and a scene which shows the threat resolve itself. And he saved himself. Now, if I set up those threats and resolves every second, then I've got a very fast game, which could appeal to those teenagers in the arcade.
Like I said, I think it has the most advanced graphics I've seen in any type of game I've played before. And that in itself is just really, really addictive.
In playing the arcade games, I found that there are a lot of little sticks and dots, and, you know, the graphics are nothing to write mom about. But I thought, if we can do full-blown classical animation, and we can put a soundtrack with it, so there's sound effects, and there is a storyline, the character's not just trying to shoot things down and destroy things, but he's on a rescue mission, you know, he's trying to save something. We have music, we have, of course, all the bright colors that you see in animation. Then that's bringing the artistry of Hollywood to the engineer that programs, and the two are marrying. That's art and science getting involved together, and that's a very unusual idea. An arcade owner will pay maybe $3,900, $4,000 for an arcade game. What we've done with Dragon's Lair is that we've designed a game so that when it does deteriorate and it isn't quite as popular, he can just simply take off the laser disc and put a new laser disc on it that's a new game. Change the marquee on the front of the player and put in a new EEPROM, which holds the program, and he's ready to go again. And all of that will retail to him for under $1,000.
And when you get tired of Dragon's Lair, Don Bluth will be ready with a new animated laser game, Space Ace. And soon other companies will release their own laser arcade games. Hollywood animation and the Laserdisc have become the video arcade's latest reinforcements in the billion-dollar battle for the game player's quarter.
Of course, not everyone is so enthusiastic about video games. In fact, some doubt we need any of this new technology. And yet it's entered every aspect of our lives, our defense budget, our work, our homes, our leisure. It's created new words, new meanings for old words. And here with a few more words about words is guest commentator Edwin Newman.
Computers will unavoidably bring us new terms. Some of them are already well known. Take courseware, a fancy way of saying courses or classes, and byte with a Y, which is the unit of information storage in a computer, and RAM, which is an acronym for random access memory, and CAD, another acronym for computer assisted design. The day will come when nobody will remember what a RAM and a CAD used to be. Now, this kind of thing can't be stopped. Anything new and important has some effect on the language, and we should welcome that. It makes American English more interesting. It renews the language. But two things worry me. One is that computer language tends to be impersonal and heavy. Think of longitudinal redundancy check characters, concatenated data sets, binary incremental representations, non-polarized return to zero recordings. When the names of people who have died are removed from the Social Security and Medicare computers, this is known as death termination interface, which is just what I mean. Why don't they call it taking the names off? So I'm troubled by computer language itself. And the second thing that worries me is the tendency of such language to spread. It's attractive to people because it's the latest thing. They want to be in the vanguard, in the know. Think of input. You can't get away from it. Software. That's another. And we're only at the beginning of this. the spread of computer language beyond its own borders should not be accepted uncritically. Some of it ought to be resisted. Now, let me give you an example. In some computer establishments, there's something called the Input-Output User Access Facility. In the days before computers, such places were known as work windows. Three syllables instead of 12, and a lot more matter-of-fact and at the same time more graphic. Work windows should be preserved. The language needs them.
Ed Newman is right, of course. Every new development, every new age, you know, it seems to bring with it a new vocabulary. Sometimes unnecessarily so. Sure true of our times, these new tech times. Will this new tech fill our minds or just empty our pockets? Well, it's tough coping with all these new choices, and we hope this program will make the decisions a little easier for you and for me, and that you'll be back here with me next week when we take a further look at these new tech times.
The New Tech Times has been brought to you through a grant from the Friends of WHA-TV and Warsaw Insurance Companies. Times change. Warsaw works. For information on discounts available to viewers of the New Tech Times and a copy of the booklet How to Buy a Home Computer, published by the Electronics Industries Association, send $1 for postage and handling to the New Tech Times Discounts, Program number 1, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
¶¶